The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide. Morning Tide.
Tyler Toffoli on a brilliant feed from William Eklund. Macklin Severini, his first National Hockey League hat trick. Smith shoots. Star! Will Smith just tied the game!
Now, here's your host, Terry.
Leads it for Celebrini, moves up the middle of the ice. Here comes Macklin weaving to his left, lead pass. Eklund takes it off the left boards. He'll keep the puck going all the way back to the right point. Liljegren keeps it in. Here's Celebrini trying to twist through. Couldn't do it. Anaheim's coming out. Celebrini's trying to get back. Carlson down the left side for Anaheim, moving in, shooting it, and he scores! It's happened again at the Shark Tank. Anaheim roars back. San Jose had a two-goal lead. Anaheim scores. And Carlson wins it for the Ducks in overtime.
Coach, you still think of the positive, at least you have 2 points in two games?
Should be 2-0.
All right, good morning, everyone. I want to start out by simply acknowledging that everything you are feeling at this point is valid. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. I'm not going to tell you you're right. I'm not going to tell you much of anything about how you feel, because how you feel is how you feel. But what I am going to say is that these two losses consecutively, I feel, are like two of the worst losses in consecutive fashion to happen in the history of the franchise. And I know that there are some of you that are immediately going to jump in and say, well, Ted, you weren't there in the second year when they got blown out 13-1. I know I was not there. I was listening as a kid on the radio. But no, I was, 10 going on 11. I did not have the same conceptualization of professional team sports then as I do now. But that's also part of why we're reacting to this so relatively viscerally. Back then, the Sharks were expected to be bad. Maybe not as bad as what they ended up being in that 92-93 year, but the expectation was that the Sharks were not going to be good. Expansion teams were not expected to be good in professional sports. The Vegas Golden Knights being a very, very rare exception to that fact. And yes, you can put that against some of the expansion teams that have come into Major League Soccer, but that's a very, very different league and a very, very different time and space with very different roster construction rules, with a very different global market compared to what hockey has. I digress. But when we talk about expansion teams, the Sharks back then in year number two were not expected to be much of anything except for something new for fans in the Bay Area to root for. Right now, this San Jose Sharks team is expected to be bad once again. They are expected to be a team that is cultivating young talent for a future that doesn't feel like it's that far off. And I think in that regard, the San Jose Sharks have done a very good job. I think that they have brought in the right coaches, the right developmental staff. You've watched William Eklund turn into a great player. You know, the way that Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith played last night was phenomenal. Shakir Mukhmudulin is still a raw piece, but showed you a lot. Last night, we got our first look at Sam Dickinson. We didn't see a whole lot either way. That's not necessarily a good or a bad thing. But I think that right now, the expectation is that you are going to be bad. The problem therein lies when you get a situation like these last two losses where it is demoralizing. No one expects to be demoralized in two consecutive games. No one expects to be hurt like that by their sports team in two consecutive games. We can go back to a couple years ago when they lost to Vancouver and Pittsburgh and they gave up 10 goals in consecutive games. And that was pretty bad, but people knew what was going on and there was a rebuild and everyone seemingly understood what was taking place. And again, that was bad, but you still knew that they didn't have the pieces together for a future. Why these two hurt so much is because you see the potential of what San Jose has. You see what some of these veterans bring to the table. You see how close they are to turning that corner. And in the midst of trying to turn that corner, they get absolutely sledgehammered in the face with the stark, cold reality of not being able to finish off games, which everyone is looking at the last 2 years and saying, I've seen this story. Why is it still happening when the roster is changing, when the head coach has changed? And yes, this is something that we've all wondered about, and I think it's part of the reality of going through a rebuild and bringing in young talent and giving them opportunities and giving them a chance, along with experienced veterans who are trying to prove that their careers still have merit, that they still have the ability to play in this league, because not a lot of players are in a hurry to come to San Jose. I give Tyler Toffoli a lot of credit because he saw a good situation, and I think that his personal star has risen since he's come to San Jose, but he's already done a lot with his career. And again, these are things that you take into consideration. But I think the problem, like I said, comes back to the fact that you are experiencing demoralizing losses. For the players, they experience it in a very different capacity. But I think as fans, you feel it as demoralizing because the games have been so exciting and you've watched brilliant play and you've watched, you know, just some incredible goals. And yes, 6 goals at home should be enough. Going into 2 consecutive games, you know, in the final few minutes with a lead at home should be enough. It should be, and it isn't. And that's why there is a demoralization that occurs. And that's why there is a concern that grows, because you do not want to get in a situation where you become relatively hopeless. And I'm not trying to pick on anyone here, but for a lot of people in the Bay Area, you don't remember what it was like with the Golden State Warriors before Steve Kerr and Steph Curry were what they are as you know them now. Before that, Mark Jackson was the first coach who had led them to any sort of consistent success since the first stint with Don Nelson back in the early 90s and run TMC. And then if you go looking even greater, you can talk about the way that the Raiders became what they were and what they currently are still trying to fight their way out of, where you're going through coaches every 2 seasons. And you can talk about some of the things the Sacramento Kings have gone through in this way. And you can talk about the Buffalo Sabres, and you can talk about the New York Jets. And yes, these are teams where there has been an expectation at this point that's built in to lose, where there is no expectation other than the negative. And I think everyone fears that reality for their team. And when you're experiencing demoralizing losses like this, you start to wonder, uh-oh, is that where this is headed? I don't think it is, but I think it's that fear in the back of everyone's head when you start to think like, uh-oh, where is this going? That's why people have begun to react so viscerally. And I think that when you have exceptionally painful, demoralizing losses back-to-back in your first 2 games that should have been wins, and I'm paraphrasing Ryan Warsawski, I'll play it for you a little bit later, but yeah, you start to wonder if the team can ever break out of this. They will break out of this. I have no doubt of that. The Sharks will find their way back into being a contending team that is going to be able to give themselves a lot of fun in the future, and they'll give the fans a lot of fun in the future. I think they simply have too much talent right now that shows what they are capable of in the near future. But we always talk about the future. The future should be brilliant, but that doesn't take away from what the present is. And that's why I go back to saying I'm validating all your feelings, regardless of how you feel. I'm not telling you that you're right or wrong. I'm just saying that you're valid to feel them, because these have been 2 exceptionally brutal losses happening in very similar capacity, which have a rhyme to what we saw last year in particular with San Jose and 2 years ago, to where the team is not able to close out games. And when you have your veterans out there on the ice, the guys who are supposed to be able to lead the team through those rough moments, when they're coming up short, it hurts. When your star, your generational talent, is trying to do everything himself and makes a bad play that quickly goes the other direction that leads to you losing the game, that's a bad feeling. And there's a lot of negativity wrapped around these 2 games, which felt like they should have been wins, that everyone's now just saying, oh my God, what is going on? And there's people who are saying, oh, you know, you got a tank for Gavin McKenna, and this is who the Sharks are right now. And I don't buy into any of that. I just understand where you're coming from because, listen, I'm a fan too. I remember what it was like when I would watch my teams have these absolutely terrible moments in franchise history, whether it was the Sharks, whether it was the 49ers, whether it was the A's, whether it was the Earthquakes, whether it was the Warriors. I mean, you go down the list. As a guy that grew up in the Bay Area, the son of a sports broadcaster, sports were bigger than anything. I mean, as I told my dad later when he asked why there was a hole in my wall, I told him Brett Favre, and he kind of laughed because he didn't see it till after I moved out and they took down a poster in my room. Now, those are the type of things that, you know, you can't ever get away from. I acknowledge that I work in sports and I am extremely lucky in that capacity that I've been able to turn that fandom into a broadcasting career and be able to express my thoughts and feelings to you on the other side. But I'm just saying, I get it. I remember it. I was there. I know exactly how it feels. I can tell you about, you know, many times where the Sharks had me unbelievably upset. And I think that's why at this point in time, I'm able to look at what happened in this game, particularly in really the first two games, and be able to say, yeah, you're right. It's pretty bad. It's pretty awful to have those types of games happen back to back, because also the rest of the sports world looks at that and they say, this is the team that lost, you know, back to back games, giving up 10 goals. This is the team that could never get over the top when they were perennial contenders. I'll never forget Jim Rome. And this bothered me so much during that 2014 series against the Kings when he's like, oh, the Sharks have blown a 3-0 series lead. It's 3-3 going to the game seven, because of course they did, because of course it's the Sharks. It's like, I don't even know what that means, right? Like, we just saw the Boston Red Sox a decade prior come back from a 3-0 deficit on the Yankees and then, you know, ride that momentum into the World Series. I didn't care for it. I felt that the national perspective on the Sharks was wrong compared to what it would have been and what it could have been. And actually, there's some interesting thoughts on that. If you listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman, he kind of talks about how good the Sharks were for how long they were. And he's doing it in the context of the comments that came from Hasso Plattner, who spoke with the media, the Sharks owner, in case you don't know that name, before game number one. But it all wraps up into how the outside world perceives the Sharks, because, you know, for their era of, you know, 15-ish years, they were never able to win at all. And I always compare it to what the Utah Jazz were when they were, you know, coming up short to Michael Jordan's Bulls, as I think that's relatively one comparison, where you have incredible Hall of Fame players and great teams, but you're never able to get over the hump. And I just think that when you add up that plus the rebuild that's been going on, plus the way that some of the losses have occurred, I don't like how some of the media talks about San Jose. And I think that people get in that same mindset. And then, you know, you stack it on top to where you have these incredible games where something good might happen and something bad might happen and something bad keeps on happening as opposed to good. Yeah, it weighs on you. And last year is totally independent of this year. And 2 years ago was independent of last year, yet a lot of the same problems reared their head. Now, will a lot of the same problems rear their head in this year? I can't say so, because two games have had bad losses. That doesn't mean that everything we saw in a previous season is going to happen again. It just means that as a team going through a rebuild overall, they will continue to experience pain. But I also think that when you have two very winnable games of this fashion, you also see where things are potentially headed, because you did have 6 points from Will and Mac, right? And even though Yaroslav Askarov had a bad night, he still made some exceptional saves along the way. And this is why I'm not freaking out right now. I would certainly like everything to improve and be better. I wish they were 2-0. I would love to be 2-0. The Sharks haven't been 500 since 2021. I mean, these are the things that we have to acknowledge as part of the reality that are built into why we're feeling the way we're feeling. But this team right now is probably at a point where they're thinking to themselves, okay, where do we go from here? How do we respond to this? How do we make sure that we're not going to be in a position to where the rest of the sports world is pointing at us and saying, yeah, that's San Jose? Because I don't think they want to be perceived that way. And that's probably me as an outsider, not as a professional athlete, viewing it in a way that certainly they might never even look at it. But when I heard Ryan Warsawski after game one, and I talked about this on NBC last night, he had a little bit of a smirk that was like, guys, I know you're all just absolutely baffled by the way this went, but this isn't us. This isn't going to define us. And he had, you know, a little bit of a twinkle in his eye when he was talking to the media, and he was giving relatively expansive answers, and he was giving you what he was giving, you know, probably his team, and just trying to be like, hey, guys, that sucked. I get it. Let's shake it off. Haters gonna hate. Players gonna play. Let's go out there and win game number two. But after this one, Ryan Warsawski had a much more significantly negative reaction. And Ryan Warsawski is an emotional guy, and he talked about that in his introductory press conference. And that's not just that, you know, he overreacts to things or gets very, very amped up one way or another, but I think it's the fact that Ryan Warsawski, when he says that he's emotional as a coach, I think that means that he is desiring to express his admiration, his appreciation, his love for his team and his players and his entirety of his staff. And he wants to just rain them with praise. He wants to be prideful in them. He is prideful in them, but he wants to shower them with praise. And he wants to be able to show them that they've been taking the right steps, that they're reacting the right way. And I think that when he comes out of a game like that, where the team does so much in a very quality perspective in terms of the offensive end, to where they're scoring on the power play or the man advantage, to where they are looking just lethal at certain points. That first goal from Mac to Will to Toffoli, that looked like the power play unit from Vegas. That was unbelievable to see. And I think Ryan Warsawski wants to be able to focus on that. And he's angry after this game. He's giving short, terse, very few word answers because he's furious. And he's not going over, you know, reacting. He's not going out of his mind screaming and talking about things. I think he's just so caught up in the moment that he doesn't want to say anything that he's going to regret, in the sense of, you know, he cares deeply about his players and his team, and he knows what they're going through in that moment. And I'm sure he was furious. That doesn't mean that he's not upset with his team, but I think he's upset because they did it to themselves. You're not going to give up seven goals very often and win a game. I don't know if I'm breaking news to any of you, but that's not how you go through life as a team or a coach in the NHL. And I want to start with Yaroslav Askarov as I look a little bit more closely at this game, because I think this is the first time that Yaroslav Askarov truly has felt pressure. And I thought that he looked kind of jittery from the get-go in this game. And I think that it just kind of snowballed from there, because when he's coming before, he's been this highly touted prospect who has literally all the talent in the world. The way that I have heard people in hockey talk about Yaroslav Askarov is very, very rare. They don't even talk about Macklin Celebrini the way that they specifically talk about Yaroslav Askarov, because I think Macklin Celebrini, for all of his talent, it's as much his brain and the way he sees the games and his processing power, because he's not the athlete that Connor McDavid is. I mean, listen, let's be honest, almost no one is, but that's how people talk about Yaroslav Askarov. They talk about such a, you know, prodigy in terms of his athletic ability, in terms of his reaction time, combined with his ability to perceive the game. They talk about him like a natural. I remember one person said to me, I wish I would ever be as good at anything as that guy is at goaltending. And this person, again, is in professional hockey, working in professional hockey, and I've never heard anyone say anything quite like that, and those are the things that stick with you. And so for quite some time, Yaroslav Askarov has been in that mindset where he's got all the talent, he's got all the ability, but he hasn't had any pressure because he wasn't expected to be the man in Nashville. And last year with San Jose, he was just coming up because he was with the Barracuda, he was starting out with shutouts, he was wrecking shop down there, and he was just going to get a couple looks with San Jose, and he was going to go and, you know, shut down Edmonton until, you know, they finally broke through and beat the Sharks. But this is my point, is that he wasn't expected to be the man. Suddenly, that narrative shifted when the Sharks, you know, essentially told everyone Yaroslav Askarov next year is our number one netminder. And he's having to deal with that for the first time ever. And so for the first time ever, Yaroslav Askarov is dealing with pressure. He is dealing with expectation. He is dealing with being a franchise player. He is dealing with all of these things. And, you know, he didn't have the greatest preseason. I think we all saw that. He was not at his best. And, you know, is there something going on with his game? It's very possible. Or it could just be he's dealing with some pressure. Either way, I think they'll figure it out. Because in the course of that game in which he was on the hook for 7 goals, not all of which were his fault, some were, but some were not on him, he did make some stupendous saves. He did make some just absolutely great plays where you think to yourself, that's Yaroslav Askarov. That's the guy that I saw last year who has the ability to be a franchise netminder. But I think this certain juncture in time where we're going to see what he is in terms of how he reacts to the weight of expectations is very, very curious. Also, I look at Macklin Celebrini. Macklin Celebrini, when I was watching him in overtime, I was saying to myself, come on, Macklin, go win it. Go win this game. Do it yourself. And I know that a lot of you at home were doing exactly the same thing. I know that you were at home thinking about it, wondering about it, and hoping that Macklin would do it, because that's what special players do. We all know, whether we're talking about Steph Curry, whether we're talking about LeBron James, whether we're talking about Pat Mahomes, whether we're talking about Lionel Messi, special players put the weight of the world on their shoulders. They do it all. They give you the great moments that make you shake your head and say, that's why he is who he is. And I feel that. You feel that. Imagine what Macklin Celebrini feels. Put yourself in his head for a minute, where this entire offseason, everyone is saying, this is the next face of the NHL. Sidney Crosby is saying that. Nathan MacKinnon is saying that. Two absolute, unbelievable, phenomenal players. And even in Sidney, if he is in the twilight of his career, still an incredible player. And they are recognizing your talent from your rookie season as an 18-year-old and saying, this is the future of the NHL. And everyone else is saying, we thought it was Connor Bedard. It's Macklin Celebrini. And yes, Macklin Celebrini had fun last year. He was with Will Smith. He was with Tyler Toffoli. It was the sleepover line. Or with Colin Graf when they scored together, it was the college line. And there was no expectation. There was no weight. Macklin Celebrini was not supposed to be what he was last year. He turned into something special so quickly before our very eyes that everybody was caught off guard and tried to pretend like they didn't say that he was not supposed to be this player. They said that. By the way, I'm not forgetting. They all said Macklin Celebrini was not supposed to be as good as he is. And Macklin Celebrini has that weight on his shoulders to where everyone is expecting him to do something special nearly every time he touches the puck. Nearly every time he's going down the ice. And he did do something special. That pass through traffic to Will Smith, which he then put to Tyler Toffoli, that was an incredible play. And yes, the other couple of points that Mac picked up, those were great as well. I'm not denying that in the slightest. But that pass in and of itself. And he had another one that he put to Tyler Toffoli net front that was just like, are you kidding me with this pass? But everyone sees it now. And everybody's waiting for him to have those game-winning moments, for him to put the team on his shoulder. And he is knowing and playing with that weight. He is dealing with it for the first time. And that's why I think that, you know, you see him trying to do it all. He made a mistake. He learned from it. So far at this point, he's had some bad moments in overtime. I don't think that can be denied. And we talked about this at the end of the year media availability with Ryan Warsawski, and I specifically asked him, I said, hey, special players do special things. How do you get Macklin to understand, you know, when he should try something versus when he shouldn't? And, you know, that's part of the learning process. And that's kind of what Ryan Warsawski acknowledged, that, you know, he needs to pick his spots. And I think that if anything, Macklin Celebrini is walking away from that game and thinking to himself, that wasn't the right moment. Having puck possession in overtime is paramount, as opposed to winning it as quickly as possible. And he saw it quickly go the other direction and then go into the back of the net, and then he's walking off disappointed for the second game in a row. And it's got to be terrible. It's got to be awful. I can't imagine how bad he feels. I can't imagine how bad Yaroslav Askarov feels. I can't imagine how bad Ryan Warsawski feels. I can't imagine how bad everyone in that Sharks dressing room feels, while at the same time being absolutely baffled that they let it happen to them two games in a row. I'm sure Mike Greer is shaking his head. I'm sure he's just thinking to himself, my word, the players that I brought in are producing, the young players are producing, and we're still finding ways to lose. That's a remarkable reality to be, to have two winnable games, two late game collapses, 2 points, two overtime losses, and all the questions of the world this quickly in your first two games. But we're barely into the season, guys. There's 80 games left. The reactions that I see online, my God, you would have just thought that we blew a 3-0 series lead in the Stanley Cup, and also like a 3-0 lead in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. People are just losing their minds. And again, I get it, because it's a painful way to start the year. But at the same time, you see a lot of what this team is capable of, and I like to think that they will figure it out. Let's hear a little bit here from Macklin Celebrini.
I mean, I thought we did a good job for the most part handling the puck. I thought we made a couple mistakes, but yeah, I think we need to figure out how to close out those games.
When I was looking at the video of Macklin Celebrini giving these answers, I think I see a young man, a young athlete, a superstar in the making that is absolutely furious with himself and how that game ended. And him giving these answers is a little bit of an insight into how he is wired, because even now in year number two, when he has that A on his sweater in certain games, he's given a little bit more in terms of his answers than he did a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got it. I think he was coming out with probably more speed than I thought, and I mean, I kind of found myself in the position where I felt I needed to try to make a move. He had a good angle, and I think it can't happen. I can't turn over the puck there. I can't give up that chance for them. Gotta live to fight another day sometimes, and that's a mistake that, I mean, I'm gonna have to sleep on tonight.
A learning moment, a teaching moment, a moment that Macklin Celebrini will probably remember as he goes forward in his career. The great thing about failure is it is an incredible teacher, and Macklin Celebrini is learning from these failures. He's not the only reason the Sharks lost or anything like that. He otherwise had a pretty good game, and 3 points, I think, in any other circumstance, you'd be saying, wow, what a great game for Macklin Celebrini. But instead, people are looking at a bad play that he made in overtime that led to a goal being scored to lose. But Macklin will learn from this, and it will make him a better player. If there is anyone that has the capacity and the ability to learn from their mistakes, it is Macklin Celebrini, because he is such a high-level talent with such incredible processing power that he will look at this, he'll absorb it, and he'll never make that same mistake again. And I'm very confident in that statement. Macklin Celebrini has a processing ability that is far beyond almost anyone in the NHL, and I think we're going to watch him become a better player because of tonight. That doesn't make it any easier to accept, but it does mean there is something that can be gained from it. Head coach Ryan Warsawski, I guarantee you he is learning from this one.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Yeah, a little bit of, you know, we need some poise with chucking pucks around in the defensive zone on breakouts, out of D-zone structure, just chucking it around, and that's where they were all over us.
They have to be more careful. They have to be more aware of the situation. They have to be more ready for these late-game, high-pressure situations so that they don't keep running into the same problem time and time again. They hate that this narrative is one that they've built for themselves to where they cannot be trusted to win games cleanly at the end of the third period. They're going to change it. It just means we have to wait that much longer until Tuesday at the earliest for them to change the narrative. All right, we're out of time. I will see you on Tuesday afternoon as we get ready for the buildup and for the Sharks to play host to the Carolina Hurricanes. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.